Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
In 1967, following a run of successes building Datsun in America, Yutaka Katayama, or Mr. K, is now president of Nissan North America, and he's just been called to Nissan headquarters to select a concept design to replace the aging Fair Lady Roadster. But unbeknownst to the other executives on the selection committee, Mr. K has been quietly operating behind the scenes to push his preferred design through. The concept is referred to as Codename Z, and it really isn't a new generation roadster at all. It's a powerful new sports coupe, and something that Mr. K believes will be a huge success in the U.S. When the concept is unveiled, Mr. K acts blown away, like he's never seen the car before.
Oh, whoa, that's cool.
Who did this?
Oh, neat.
He implores the other execs to choose the design, and soon production is underway, and Nissan is well on its way to sports car immortality. These events set into motion an iconic run of sports cars, culminating in the 1990s when Nissan was on top of the automotive world. Today on Pass Gas, it's part two of our series on Datsun and Nissan. How did Mr. K's leadership of Datsun in the U.S. change the entire company? How did he become known as the father of the Z car? And how did Nissan help create an entire generation of car enthusiasts? This is Past Gas.
Past Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about ports.
Mr. K, the god of Mr. Fair Lady Z.
It'd be funny if they added stuff without telling him. And he's like, oh, is it supposed to have that?
I mean, I don't know anything it's supposed to have, but it seems extra weird that it has that.
Shag carpet headliner, huh? That's very interesting. Yeah, looks over at some other dude.
Yo, so denim, huh? I'm surprised you don't see more denim seats.
Dodge had a bunch of weird edition trucks in the late 70s, and there was a denim
AMC. AMC also had a bunch Levi's of denim Levlin. Yeah.
Honestly,
Levi's Gremlins.
That's so it'd be funny. Pretty sick.
Dude, honestly, it's pretty good material for a seat. You're already sitting on jeans anyway.
You are sitting on jeans. I feel like there'd be so much friction so fast, your butt would get... sweaty.
Like how I get crotch holes.
Crotch holes.
Yeah. You know how Joe famously gets crotch holes?
It's because I don't have the thigh gap. If I got to lose some weight this year so I get a nice thigh gap for summer.
We're all placing bets on when Joe gets thigh gap.
Yeah, we're all waiting for that thirst trap.
Yeah. But Joe for Weber now, you hear... You hear that corduroy when I walk into the office.
It's like, wow, it's hot in here. Joe in the office? Welcome back to Past Gas, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. I am joined by my co-host, as always, James Pumphrey.
Lightning. Where's my dad?
And Joe Weber.
I'll take you to Thigh Gapplebee's.
That's my least favorite restaurant. I don't want to have my birthday at Thigh Gapplebee's.
Oh, boy. And my name is Nolan. As you know, go ahead.
No,
and
that's
it.
Lame, dude.
What?
And that esteemed young gentleman sitting to my right is Nolan Sykes.
Hello. Go ahead. And
Hello.
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 I'm
Put
back
it on
this
a shirt.
Week. Guys, it's part two of Datsun.
Yeah,
you guys catch me up a little bit? What happened last time?
Basically, they made a car company in Japan.
Yeah, really early, like 20s or something.
It was lots of mergers and acquisitions, honest.
Okay.
And then Mr. K really kind of reinvented marketing.
Did he come in kind of like he was like a page six character, page five introduction maybe?
No,
he's there for
two, page three.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And he came out of nowhere, young gun,
yeah,
hard
yeah.
to work with, so they just gave him his own
work with.
Like part of the company marketing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so he like destroyed that, like did really well in Japan.
In a good way. Destroyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're
in the millennial
he crushed
way.
It.
The way that they used to advertise was say the name of the car over and over and over again.
That's
just say the name of the car. And he was like, why don't we get a celebrity?
Yeah. Influencer marketing.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
He invented.
So they went from head on. Apply mm-hmm. directly to
head
the forehead.
On. Head on, yeah. directly.
To yeah.
Influencer marketing.
Yeah. Nissan Aria.
They entered
Nissan Ariana Grande.
They entered into a crazy race in Australia. Didn't win, but came in second.
Yeah, that was the 510.
9,000 miles.
To the 510, right?
9,800 miles.
Wow. Yeah. 9,800 miles?
Yeah. Yeah. Around the rim.
That's a lot of kilometers.
Around the rim.
Yeah.
Around the rim.
Of Australia. And then none of the old, big, old guard liked working with them, so they sent him to America.
I see. Okay. Well,
and they were like, make Datsun big here.
All right.
And he said, sure.
Wow, great job.
Thank you.
Great job.
Thank you.
Recapping that.
Thank you.
Now I'm caught up.
He got his name because he just says, K.
K.
Yeah. K, I'll do that.
K.
Hey, you got to go make Datsun big in America. K.
K. Slime off a slug's back.
He was the one who invented that.
Yeah, he invented that.
Wow.
He also invented... being greasy. That was his catchphrase. He'd just walk into a meeting and he'd be like, hey, Mr. K, what's up? He's like, you know me, just being greasy.
Yeah.
Sick.
But he did, like...
He's invented cowabunga.
Wow. That's a big one.
Yeah. I caramba. He basically, like, he invented lifestyle marketing.
Mm.
He was like, oh, look at how, you know, like, this movie star looks driving this car. Don't you want to live that lifestyle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Without Mr. K, there would be no Kylie. Miss K.
Interesting.
Kylie Jenner.
Wow.
What car has she sold?
She sold a lot of lip kits.
Oh.
Not lift kits. Lip kits.
New Kylie Jenner off-road lift kits.
Kylie Jenner lift kits.
Hmm. All right. Should we get into this part two then?
Sure.
Let's do it.
We left part one of this series in 1959 as Nissan had just begun expanding their footprint abroad in markets like the U.S. and Australia. It was risky and uncharted territory, and to mitigate as much risk as possible, the company developed a sort of fail-safe exit strategy just in case things completely fell apart. As listeners may remember from our previous episode, in Japan, the company's larger vehicles were sold as Nissans and their smaller vehicles as Datsuns. Rather than replicate this naming convention in America, a decision was made to sell all cars imported to the U.S. as Datsuns, even if some of the models were known as Nissans in Japan. In doing so, they could protect the Nissan name if they failed, leaving the door open to the U.S. market at a later date.
Interesting.
Yeah, that car that broke down, that wasn't a Nissan.
That was a Datsun.
That was Datsun.
Those you suck.
That was
completely different.
That was some other dude.
Yeah. But even with this failsafe, the push of Datsun in the U.S. was anything but half-hearted. The Nissan home office felt that success in the U.S. was imperative to the growth of the company, and they went all in. To help lead this bold new expansion, they turned to the man who had spent the last 25 years successfully building their brands in Japan, Mr. K. Mr. K was perfect for the job. He was an advertising genius and had brought notoriety and prestige to Datsun and Nissan in Japan through innovative commercials, celebrity endorsements, and car shows.
Oh, yeah.
He also invented, like, the car show.
The Tokyo car show he started.
Yeah, so, like, the idea of a bunch of manufacturers coming together and presenting everything together, that was him.
Interesting.
And the other manufacturers were like, no, why would we do that? Why would we show our nice, beautiful cars off at a show?
Next to yours.
And he's like, you guys are idiots.
Trust me.
Yeah. Very cool.
They used to do it individually. It also helped that in the late 20s, Mr. K had spent time on a cargo ship sailing between the U.S. and Japan, where he developed a working knowledge of the import process as well as a familiarity with America as a country. He was also known to be a rogue employee that would make surprising and often unilateral decisions. And though Mr. K often grated on his coworkers, no one could argue with his results. His bold decision-making was exactly what this project needed. In 1960, The 51-year-old Mr. K arrived in Los Angeles as the VP of North American Operations to begin building the Datsun brand all over again. Apart from a handful of Datsuns that had been imported by American servicemen who had served in Japan, the brand was completely unknown in the country. And if you asked U.S. automakers why there was a market gap in the compact segment, they would have told you it's because there is no desire for them. Why would we want little cars when we have big cars?
There's more room.
We got every family has 2.5 children. You trying to fit 2.5 children in a tiny little car?
Yeah. To complicate matters, bitter feelings and xenophobia still existed towards the Japanese after World War II, which had ended only 15 years prior. As a result, the government made it difficult to obtain a working visa, which often forced Nissan employees from Japan to leave and re-enter the country every 2 weeks quote, renew their visitor visas.
What a pain.
In order to build the brand, Mr. K first had to make sure Datsun had places to sell and service their cars. With few connections to lean on, he built the network in a grassroots fashion, traveling up and down the West Coast, paying visits to established dealers from other brands, and attempting to sell them on Datsuns. While most established dealers turned him away, he found luck with used car dealers who were eager for an opportunity to sell new vehicles. Mr. K had found his foothold in America. Over the next few years, Datsun and Nissan in Japan would undergo an immense amount of growth. And through it came some of their most iconic cars and new sporty identity.
Ooh,
there's a couple people I've read about on the internet who say all I do is interrupt you guys talking about information. And I just want to let all you know, I read half of all of these.
Yeah.
All right? I'm delivering half the information. So if I'm delivering half the information and saying jokes as well, that's doing a lot.
Yeah. Throughout the early 60s, Datsun sales in the U.S. were predictably low. Business was initially built much like the dealer network, with Mr. K himself often going door-to-door. But this time to Japanese farmers to drum up business. The low demand might have been beneficial at first, because had it been any higher, it's possible Datsun wouldn't have been able to fulfill the orders.
I went to a little town in the central coast called Guadalupe, where my friend Chachi lives. And pre-war, a ton of Japanese farmers lived here.
Oh, cool.
And so, like, the main street is really cool. There was, like, there's an old, like, Japanese restaurant facade that is no longer in business for I don't know how many years. But during the World War II, they just basically, the government took all this, their land, and put them in internment camps, and they never went back. And it's really...
I had no idea about that. I mean, yeah. Of course, the internment camps I knew about, but Guadalupe in particular.
Yeah,
no
you know idea. Where it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's super cute. And my friend Chachi's restoring like an old theater there. It's really
that's sick.
Oh, cool. Great.
Early on, shipments from Japan were far and few between. This would lead to incidents like when San Diego resident Richard McCutcheon spotted a Datsun 1000 pickup on the back of a truck. He followed it to a dealership owned by Ray Lemke and purchased the truck on the spot. It was the first Datsun pickup sold in the U.S., and the last model Lemke would get his hands on for another 3 months.
It's funny that they wrote down these guys' names.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Dick McCutcheon.
Dick McCutcheon. Ray Lemke.
Consumers mostly balked at the diminutive underpowered cars like the 1-liter 42-horsepower Datsun Bluebird sedan. Instead, it was the 1000 pickup that, despite having the same engine as the sedan, developed a cult following amongst gardeners and farmers who needed an efficient and space-friendly utility vehicle. But pickup sales alone wouldn't be enough to carry Datsun. And now, as it was in 1930s Japan, Mr. K needed to make the brand's cars desirable. While celebrity endorsements and luxury department store associations may have worked back home, an economical and compact Japanese import would never be able to carry such an image in the U.S. Mr. K knew that Datsun would need to take a new approach if they were to appeal to American tastes. This required a Herculean effort in convincing the home offices to abandon their Europe-influenced designs and design more cars with more American sensibilities in mind. The cars
were nuts.
We're nuts.
We're truck nuts on them.
Big old, oh.
Can you put some big old boobs on the front for me?
Yeah, please. And make it a cheeseburger. This car isn't even a cheeseburger. Yeah,
I'm not getting cheeseburger from it at all.
Yeah, there's no Simpsons in this car.
The cars would need to be larger and more powerful. And to set them apart from their economical competition, he felt they should have high-quality interiors, a sporty feel, and a reputation for excellent reliability and dealer service. But total redesigns would take a lot of persuasion and, more importantly, time. So, because the brand was desperately eager to boost sales, Mr. K started with a simple and easy project, changing the car's names to different names. I misread that. But I
thought that was a comma, yeah, but it was a period.
Yeah. I'm going to carry on. Mr. K had felt the Japanese market names like Bluebird and Fair Lady were too soft for the American market.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be the Datsun
Big Guy. Yeah.
Big Guy. Tough
Datsun
dude.
Bump Stop.
Yeah. And he convinced Nissan HQ to use only numbers and letters for car names in the U.S. The Bluebird became the 1000 Sedan, and the Fair Lady became known as the 1000 Sports. Both cars would retain those names for several years, with the numerical value changing to reflect engine size increases. The number and letter naming convention itself would continue for decades. Mr. K's petitioning of Nissan to incorporate more American-friendly designs was a success, and throughout the 60s, car and engine sizes grew.
I mean, luckily for him, Americans are very easy to figure out.
Yeah. Put a burger on it.
Yeah. It looks like a burger. Okay.
Cars like the 1967 Datsun 510 marked a shift in design philosophy, and thanks to its 96-horsepower engine, attractive design, upmarket interior, and sporty driving dynamics, Americans began to warm to the brand. I would love a 510.
So yeah, weren't you talking about getting a 510
at some point?
Everybody
wants one of them.
All my cars are square.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I need another square car. I might get a swoopy one, but that's where 240Z would be great.
A Morgan Aero Coupe? That's what you want?
Yeah.
A Morgan Aero Coupe. It's got a wooden floor. Datsun sold 45,000 510s in the U.S. in the car's first year on the market. The new design did more than transform Datsun for America as well. It transformed Datsuns around the globe. The American-influenced car was a hit in Japan and other markets, and other American-influenced designs followed. By the end of its production run in 1973, the 510 had sold 400,000 units worldwide. Sales were finally steady, and Mr. K had successfully established Datsun's reputation as a reliable and affordable brand. But his biggest contribution was yet to come.
Yeah, I know we were joking about like cheeseburgers and stuff, but I am kind of sick of all these foreign countries poo-pooing on America because we do pretty much decide the taste for the entire globe. And I'm not talking cheeseburgers.
And I
think there's a lot of Europeans that would get angry at that.
Well, tell them to fight me in a war.
Tell them to kick rocks, Joe.
You do hear like European rap and it's like...
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What am I going to listen to, Bach? Try again, dork. Beyonce just dropped a country album.
And now time to pay the bills.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
In the mid-1960s, Mr. K was promoted to president of Nissan North America. He met a designer named Yoshihiko Matsuo while visiting the office in Yokohama. Matsuo was another rebellious type within the company and, given Mr. K's similar reputation, confided in him that he had been working on an all-new sports car design after Nissan executives asked him to design a simple replacement for the Fair Lady 1600 Roadster. While popular in Japan since its 1959 launch, its American counterparts, like the Sport 1600, had struggled. Mr. K had wanted a compact sports car for Datsun in the U.S. for years, and Mitsuo's sports coupe sketches were just what he had in mind. Mr. K and Mitsuo were determined to make the concept a reality. Mr. K began to pressure Nissan executives to build a sports coupe for the American market, and Mitsuo hired additional engineers to work on the conservative Fairlady Roadster replacement that Nissan execs wanted. This allowed Mitsuo to devote his time exclusively to his sports coupe concept. Mr. K then asked design manager Taichi Hara to assemble a team to work on Mitsuo's concept without the knowledge of the company higher-ups. The secret project soon took on a development code Z.
Z. Skunk Works.
Zed.
Zed.
R-nar, it's the Skunk Squarks.
In 1967, when it came time for the design team to present the Fairlady Roadster replacement concepts to Nissan executives, they went all in on making the Z look like the obvious choice during the presentation. Mr. K was present at the meetings as well, and when the Z was unveiled, he acted as if he'd never seen the car before. He told the executives, he was like, "What? What the hell, you guys?
What?
What? No, I told you to be
get it out
designing
of here.
That one car. You designed this piece of crap.
Guys. Oh, I'm so mad at you.
Jeez, guys. Honestly, though, it does look pretty sick.
Wow. I guess I better sit in it before you take it away.
Jeez. So it's so comfortable. It feels good. Oh, man.
Oh, too bad. I'm we're going to have to destroy it.
Yeah, we got to throw it in the trash. But honestly, it is pretty cool. I mean, I'm mad, but. After years of conspiratorial planning, the Z was given the green light. Mr. K heavily oversaw the development of the car and described working with Mitsuo's design team as one of the most challenging parts of the process, saying they all had very high self-esteem and didn't want to hear any input from others. I approached them as humbly as possible. And finally, they listened to me. Having high self-esteem is a nice way of saying they were arrogant.
Yeah.
The car was built around a few key design philosophies laid out by Mr. K. The first was that the car should be easy to drive for anyone, and that it should, quote, transpose the relationship between man and horse into one between man and car.
That's what you're talking about.
Jin by a tie.
Jin by a tie.
Man and horse become one. In a cool way.
In a cool...
In a not...
Not like that anime where the girl and the dog... Yeah.
Yeah, not
Full
like
Metal
that...
Alchemist.
Not like that die. Yeah. Not like that guy from Oregon who died because he wanted to become one with a horse.
That guy did become one with the horse.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Hands?
Yeah.
Mr. Hands.
Yeah. Not like that. Just normal. Like riding one and being friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a video of a horse laying down.
And are you going to say lay an egg?
Yeah. Seen a horse lay an egg? And put its head on this lady's lap.
Oh.
And it was like, got to make that happen.
Yeah.
He also mandated that the car be easy to maintain, saying, quote, "It doesn't have to be luxurious. It should be affordable so that anyone can own one. It should be easy to maintain. It should be something that you can enjoy without having to spend too much money. If you don't add any extra equipment and features and can still experience great acceleration while driving, then that's the best situation as far as I am concerned. After all you need to ride a horse is a saddle." Mm. And a lot of times, not even that. You ever heard of bareback?
It's when you become one with the horse.
It's when you connect your braid to their braid.
Yeah. Finally, he asked that the final design be more U.S. market friendly, which included raising the roofline to accommodate taller drivers. Thank you. How short was it to begin with? It's a pretty sleek car.
I know. Yeah. Can't even imagine.
As well as widening the frame to accommodate an optional automatic transmission. The end result was a low-slung coupe reminiscent of a Jaguar E-Type with a long nose, sleek body, and short rear deck.
Oh, yeah.
Sold as the Nissan Fairlady Z in Japan, the Datsun 240Z internationally, The new car featured a 2.4-liter inline-six, making 151 horsepower, which would take the car from 0 to 60 in just under 8 seconds.
Is this the L?
L20?
L, yeah.
L24?
I would assume so.
They call it the L, but it was a W. The car also featured four-wheel independent suspension, a four-speed manual, and an interior that journalists deemed futuristic. Had those gauge pods on
the
dash.
Gauge pods aimed at the driver.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
In the U.S., the car went on sale October 22nd, 1969, nice, for $3,600 or $29,000 in today's dollars.
Yeah.
Which is sick.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was an immediate hit, selling over 45,000 units in its first 2 years and over 135,000 through 1973 in the U.S. alone. Internationally, over 1 million would be sold in its first decade. Similarly priced cars simply couldn't compete with its performance, and similarly performing cars couldn't compete with its price.
I do agree that Fairlady sounds a little soft.
Yeah.
But then when you put girl. The Z on the end, it's like way more mysterious, you know?
Yeah, Fairlady Z is a pretty cool name.
Fairlady Z.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But 240Z, that tells me how big the engine is.
Yeah.
It outsold the Mustang that year.
Oh,
wow.
By like hundreds.
Well, eat it, Lee Iacocca.
Lee Iacocca.
While Mr. K's management of Datsun in the U.S. and the results of his American-focused efforts had ramifications throughout the company worldwide, in Japan, Nissan had its own homegrown icon, the Skyline. Longtime fans of Donut are probably familiar with our extensive content library on the Skyline, including a two-part Pass Gas series on the GTR. But no story of Nissan would be complete without talking about it. So for you new listeners out there and Skyline diehards alike, here's a quick little rundown, okay? Initially made by a company called Prince, the Skyline made a name for itself racing in the early and mid-60s, going up against well-established European racing teams and holding its own. At a GT2 event at Suzuka in 1964, Skyline GT sedans shocked everyone when they claimed positions 2 through 6, losing out to only a single Porsche. In 1965, the racing-inspired Skyline 2000 GT went on sale in Japan. In 1966, Prince was absorbed by Nissan in a government-mandated restructuring of the auto industry to make them more competitive with global manufacturers. The Skyline name officially belonged to Nissan, and with the racing know-how of former Prince engineers, Nissan got into racing and performance cars in earnest.
It is kind of weird that the government is like basically merging two companies into this super company so they can be more globally competitive.
Yeah, it's like a opposite of an antitrust.
That's what I'm thinking is like in America, we break up monopolies.
Well, sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes they...
I mean, we used to.
We're suing Apple right now. The government is suing Apple too.
Probably because like some other guy wants the monopoly.
We're too good at monopolies.
We're great at it.
We're great at it.
In 1969, engineer Shinichiro Sakurai, the man considered to be the father of the Skyline, took a newly developed Nissan racing engine and stuffed it into the third generation Skyline, and the first GTR was born. The car immediately built a reputation of being the height of technology, something it would carry throughout the decades, by having advanced technologies such as the world's first four-valve dual overhead cam head in a mass-produced car, and in its first 2 years, it racked up a staggering 49 wins at the track. Its boxy design lent the car the nickname Hakosuka. Hako, the Japanese word for boxy, and suka being a shortened version of sukuren, which means skyline in Japanese.
Suka also means bitch in Russian.
Ah.
Boxy bitch.
Boxy bitch.
Unfortunately, after only a few years of production, the GTR was discontinued when the gas crisis struck in 1973. It would be another 16 years before the variant would return in the Skyline range. But while the Japanese market decided to weather the oil price storm behind its more affordable and efficient cars, Mr. K and Datsun were in a prime position in the U.S. compared to the enormous domestic cars, which became seen as money pits virtually overnight. Customers flocked to Datsun dealers, and the brand sold its 1 millionth car in America in 1973, baby.
You should be gas crisis deniers. Never happened. Oh, people were lining up to get gas? Yeah, right.
Anybody can make that with Photoshop.
Yeah. I know how to copy and paste people in pictures.
Datsun pickups were also considered excellent alternatives to the U.S.-made trucks during the gas crisis and were the top-selling light trucks in the U.S. for several years. By 1975, Datsun had become the top-selling auto importer in the U.S. As he had in Japan 40 years before, Mr. K had built Datsun into a desirable brand. When he retired in 1977 at 68 years old, he had an incredible legacy to look back upon. After popularizing Nissan and Datsun in the 1930s, helping lead the brands into the modern era in the 50s, and revolutionizing auto advertising along the way, he then started over in America. He built a dealer network and a brand image from scratch, reshaped said brand with an America-focused redesign of many of Datsun's cars, and helped pave the way for two iconic cars, the 510 and the Z.
Dude, that's a legacy.
That's a lot.
That's really crazy to like be in that many different eras of automotive history and still be on the cutting edge every single time.
Reflecting on Datsun's early years in the U.S. later in his life, Mr. K credited the dealer's patience with the brand's ultimate success. Quote,
"In the beginning, we had no status or prestige, and we were not wealthy either. During the difficult times, we all gritted our teeth and worked together, and we made it through. For me, they're not just dealers, but friends. I'm speaking like a big man, but I owe everything to them."
2 years after his retirement, his America-focused legacy was carried on when Nissan Design America, or NDA, was established in La Jolla, California, to design cars not just with the U.S. market in mind, but cars specifically made for the U.S. market.
We went there. We saw the unveiling of the Z during La Jolla? Pandemic times. I'm pretty sure it was like really close to San Diego.
Yeah, it was. In 1980, Nissan opened a Datsun factory in Smyrna, Tennessee, to produce cars designed by NDA.
Oh, Smyrna, that's right near Smegma.
Smyrna.
It's Smyrna.
Smyrna.
It's Smyrna.
These moves were so successful that many automakers followed suit. Smyrna, Tennessee,
Smyrna,
baby.
Smyrna, Tennessee.
Go Cougars.
We'll get right back to it, but first, a few commercials.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
In the 1980s, Japan was the world's top auto-producing country. Nissan themselves were a global success, and in 1983, they decided to retire the Datsun name to solidify their powerhouse brand under one name. Beginning on June 16, 1983, in the U.S. with the 720 pickup, Datsun badges were exchanged for Nissan ones.
I'm sorry, I always say go Cougars because there's always a good chance that a school in that area would be called the Cougars.
Good. Yeah.
It was not Cougars, but it was
Wildcats.
The second close Bulldogs.
Bulldogs.
Smyrna Bulldogs.
Go Smyrna Bulldogs.
You angrier than a Smyrna Bulldog.
I lost my foot at a Smyrna Bulldogs game.
For a short period, cars were advertised as Datsun Nissans to ease the transition, with some vehicles even carrying both badges.
Yeah, like my Z.
Nissan Datsun.
It's got both badges.
Both badges. It's got both badges. It was likely the perfect time to rebrand, as Nissan was on the cusp of the most iconic periods in their history. In the late 80s, Nissan launched their luxury Infiniti brand, and through the early 2000s released one incredible sports car after another. In Japan, Nissan launched the R32 Skyline GTR in 1989 to critical acclaim. Designed by Naganori Ito, the R32 brought the GTR name back with a vengeance after a 16-year absence and the lukewarm reception of the R31. The R32 was a technological marvel. It featured an Atessa all-wheel drive system that was capable of distributing the engine's torque to the front wheels as needed for grip. A high-cast four-wheel steering system. and the first iteration of the legendary 2.6-liter twin-turbo inline-six RB26 DETT engine. The R32 put Nissan's recently established Nismo Racing team on the map. In its first year in the Japanese Touring Car Championship Group A Series, it won all 29 races and won the championship twice in 1990 and 1994. In Australian Touring Car Championship, the car was so dominant that the ATCC actually changed the rules to favor other cars after it won the 1990, 91, and 92 championships, earning the nickname Godzilla in
We just did an episode on this a couple
on
weeks
Bathurst.
Ago. Yeah, Bathurst.
Bathurst.
In 1990, Nissan launched the Z32 generation of their Z car, which was known as a Fair Lady Z in Japan and in the U.S. as the 300ZX. Like the R32, the Z32 was technologically advanced and much more powerful than its predecessors. Its 300 horsepower, 3-liter twin-turbo V6 could get the car to 60 in a mere 5 seconds.
Damn.
It was the pinnacle of Nissan performance in the U.S., garnering critical acclaim and earning comparisons to cars like the Dodge Viper. It's crazy. We've mentioned it a lot, but it's crazy that Nissan had the RB26.
Yeah.
And then they made the 300ZX, and they're like, oh, let's make a twin-turbo V6.
Yeah. I know.
Like, that would never, ever happen now.
It's really weird. And also, makes me feel bad about my Z31 because that's double the horsepower that I have.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, that's not a reflection on you, Joe.
No, I know.
You're still a man. Like, yeah. No, you're still a man.
Okay, I wish people thought of me as Z32 guy so they would send me Craigslist posts of those.
Yeah. I love when people send you Craigslist or ads for cars for sale that you own.
That you already have.
Yeah. It's like, no, I already got one. It makes like targeted ads more understandable because it's like, oh, this is just how people think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you like that? Here, take this.
I would understand if they're like, hey, is this a good deal?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
maybe.
I'm kind of thinking of one, and then you're like, well, you should buy it. And they're like, no, I don't want it. It's like, why are you sending it to me?
For price conscious enthusiasts, at least back then, Nissan again had an answer with the Nissan Silvia S13. Though the truck-engined US spec 240SX may have been anemic compared to the 2-liter turbo 4-cylinder powered Silvias in other parts of the world, the car was no less important and remains an icon in drift culture.
You had that one, right? The truck one? Was it S14?
I had an S13.
S13.
Yeah.
But it had the truck motor?
Yeah.
What's one? That's called DT or
K24DET.
DET.
Is the twin cam one, and there's a DE, which is not.
Gotcha.
But both are...
I'd take one.
Fine.
I don't care. I'll take one. Yeah.
Throughout the 90s, the Skyline, Z, and Silvia made Nissan a living legend. Though the Z would end sales in the U.S. in 96 and in Japan in 2000, the company continued to improve on the Skyline and Silvia through 2002. The R33 GTR launched in 1995 and stunned the automotive world when it bested the R32's time around the Nordschleife by 20 seconds and became the first production car to lap the track in under 8 minutes.
Wow, wow.
Yeah, and it looks like a car. The year prior, the S14 Silvia was launched. Then in 1999, the most iconic version of the Skyline and Silvia, the R34 GTR, and the S15 came out, becoming instant icons thanks to games like Gran Turismo and movies like The Fast and the Furious.
Man, can you imagine how fun it would be to have Donut back then?
How would they watch it on their
Game Boy? but just to be
on TV,
like around this time when everything is launching. This is just one company, by the way.
I know.
This is like insane, and they're all different amazing vehicles in their own sense.
Like Nissan in the 90s made like such a list of iconic cars, that it bankrupted them. But they like they went so hard. They're sort of like the car company example of like die young and leave a good looking corpse.
Yeah, it's kind of like
you only live once. Like they YOLO'd straight through the 90s.
It's basically like what Dodge is doing. But like in a way better, cooler, smarter way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this on our other show, Big Three.
Yeah.
Like how Nissan right now is kind of like, I would say, struggling to find their identity.
Yeah.
Even though they have such like a big backlog to or legacy to fall back on, it is sort of like, well, I don't know. Music is not the same, a good comparison, but like Metallica, it's like legendary band, incredible back catalog if you go back far enough.
Mm-hmm.
But like these days, you're like, I don't listen to their new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And like if they made the Black Album right now, no one would like it.
It's basically like having the rights to a bunch of really good IP and then just like, how are they going to mess this up?
But like, I think like if Nissan did anything like they were doing in the 90s, they wouldn't be successful now.
You think?
Nobody buys sports cars. Like the Supra didn't sell super well. The Z didn't sell very like well at all. Like a GTR is a very small segment.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's hard. I don't know. They just need to find that identity and their target audience.
There's
again,
also so much more stuff to spend money on now. Like there's so
like
much
streaming services.
Yeah.
I have a lot of them.
But like, back in the 90s,
stressing
if you
out.
If you were doing well and you wanted to reward yourself for doing well, it's like, oh, I have a house and I have a nice car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like now you have so much stuff that shows status.
Mm-hmm. Well, they also had Beanie Babies.
I know.
And
Pogs. Yeah, with
those. Dude, is the decline of Nissan directly correlated to Beanie Babies?
I won't say.
Let us throw in the thumbnail comments right now.
It would be impossible to overstate the impact Nissan had on car culture throughout this era, with legions of enthusiasts likely owing their love of cars to these Nissans.
But unfortunately for Nissan, this enthusiast golden era came at a cost. Like James said, while Nissan spent tons of R&D money on its sports cars, it had neglected its bottom line. The Japanese economy had been in a recession since 1991, and to complicate matters further, Nissan suffered from an antiquated supply chain that led them to spend 15 to 25% more than other manufacturers just on their supplies.
This is one of the first things that Carlos Ghosn did when he took over, is like make everything in-house.
The company never adjusted their prices accordingly, and for every car they sold in the U.S., they lost around $1,000.
That's bad business.
That's a lot. Holy moly.
Hey, listen, I didn't go to Harvard Business School, I know. You're losing $1,000 on every car?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
You got to do some housekeeping.
You went to Phoenix Online.
I went to University of Phoenix for hairdressing school.
It's
and
weird
no,
to do
not
it on-
cutting hair, making dressing for your hair.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's weird to do that in online classes.
I know. It didn't translate to the real world.
Oops. By the end of the 90s, they hadn't made a profit in 8 years, and only 3 out of 46 models in Japan generated any revenue.
Oh, God.
Good Lord. To lead the brand back from the verge of bankruptcy, Nissan hired former Michelin CEO Carlos Ghosn as COO. Ghosn developed and implemented the Nissan Revival Plan, which included cutting 21,000 jobs, or 14% of all of Nissan, closing 5 Japanese plants, overhauling the Infiniti line, and discontinuing the Silvia and Skyline GTR.
Ghosn!
That's why they called him Le Cost Killer.
Le Cost Killer. But the plan worked. Within 2 years, Nissan was profitable once again. Just 2 years. And Ghosn had become CEO. And while the new Fairlady Z or 350Z and Skyline 350 GT, known in the U.S. as the Infiniti G35, had kept Nissan relevant in enthusiast circles, this era is more commonly remembered for its bubbly, bloated-looking cars and crossovers and for gifting us the ultimate driver meme thanks to very friendly lending policies.
And the Murano.
The Nissan Murano. One saving grace from this era was the revival of the GTR. Rather than be attached to the Skyline, which had become more of a luxury car, this new GTR would be a car unto itself. Designed as a supercar to be used anytime, anywhere, by anyone, the R35 GTR was released in 2007 to rave reviews. At $70,000, this car was incredibly affordable, relative, given its performance capabilities. It was one of the first cars equipped with launch control, which combined with its all-wheel drive system and hand-built 470-horsepower twin-turbo V6, baby, it could get the car to 60 in a neck-breaking 3.2 seconds. GTR launch control reaction videos were some of the earliest car YouTube content, and thanks to a global sales plan, it was the first GTR sold in the U.S. and also the most successful GTR to date.
Yeah, it was that giraffe zoo video.
Yeah.
And then the GTR videos.
Yeah. Datsun enjoyed a brief revival in the 2010s when it was introduced to emerging markets as it had been before, as a reliable and affordable car. And today, like most automakers, Nissan is focusing on autonomous and all-electric future. They entered the 2010s ahead of the game when they launched the Leaf, the world's first mass-produced electric car, and are currently working on electrifying their lineup and releasing new EVs such as the Ariya. Though the long-rumored R36 GTR is yet to be unveiled, concepts like the Hyperforce show that the GTR may be in for that all-electric future. Nissan's performance history lives on in the current generation GTR and the 400-horsepower Z34 generation of the Z car, the Nissan Z, which borrows imagery from its past with its 240-style quarter-panel insignia and taillights reminiscent of the 300ZX.
The new Z has a bunch of different little homages to old Zs. It's got the pods that we were talking about before, the gauge pods. It's even got, like, the katana, they call it, above the driver's side door.
Yeah, it's a good car.
I like it a lot.
Great car.
Yeah.
Because sales haven't been that great for the car, I still get excited. You don't see them. So when you see them on the street, I get excited.
I want a white one.
Yeah, white would be sick.
Yeah. From its humble beginnings as a compact car manufacturer, driven by Yosuke Akawa's desire to turn Japan into a global auto manufacturing giant, Nissan has risen to every challenge it's been presented with. It stood out from its rivals thanks to innovative advertising in the 30s, survived the Second World War, and then made a remarkable recovery in the 1950s. In the 1960s, Nissan successfully established the Datsun brand in the U.S. and established itself as a sports car icon with cars like the Skyline GTR and 240Z. The gas crisis only made the brand stronger, like Donut got stronger during COVID. And after unifying its brands under the Nissan name in the 80s, it went on an unprecedented run of creating legend after legend with the R32, 33, and 34 Skylines, 300ZX, and S13, 14, and 15 Silvias, leaving a brand new generation of enthusiasts in its wake. After a brush with bankruptcy around the turn of the millennium, Nissan adapted, and it's currently the seventh best-selling brand in the U.S., a success story it no doubt owes to Mr. K. Mr. K was inducted to the American Automotive Hall of Fame in 1998. All told, he spent 80 years involved in the auto industry in advertising, leadership, and as an advisor. His leadership and expansion of Datsun in the U.S. and his ability to persuade Nissan home offices to build cars in the U.S. market in mind changed the company forever. He also gave us icons like the 240Z and cemented himself in automotive legend as the father of the Z car. Mr. K died on February 19th, 2015 at an astonishing 240 years old.
I was wondering, 80 years working in the car industry is insane.
No, he was 105.
Yeah, wow.
Even late into his life, he was known for his bright smile and enthusiastic personality. When asked what he wanted for the future of the car in an interview in late 2014, he said, "What I see as important is to keep searching for fun with car racing and ultimately just to enjoy driving. I simply want people to enjoy driving their cars."
Aw.
Hell love yeah. It. Which is what it all comes down to.
Yes, it does. Wow, great story. Again, really wishing Nissan luck with getting it back on track, you know?
Such an iconic brand, and I mean, the times have changed, so they can't even just go back to doing what they did so well. They gotta
figure it out.
Yeah.
Dude, Mr. K was definitely Gump mindset.
Dude, yes.
He Gump was there for every single historical event with Nissan.
Hashtag Gump mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Got some listener mail.
All right, here we go. Hello, Nolan, James, and Joe.
Hello.
Hey.
My name is Carlos, and I'm a 15-year-old car enthusiast. Cool that you have car in your name. I wanted to suggest a podcast idea for the show. I'm a Puerto Rican fan, of yours, and I would like to hear a podcast episode about the racing heritage of Puerto Rico. We love drag racing mostly, and we do many car shows and especially love rotary engines. Hmm. We swap them in everything.
Interesting.
Cool.
We love Chevy Trackers, Suzuki Grand Vitaras, RX-7s, Evos, etc. We have a special connection with cars over here, and I just wanted to pitch an idea for an episode. Sincerely, Carlos C.
The Throttle dudes were just in Puerto Rico and like built a car down there. Nice. I believe it was an RX-7.
So maybe we could do a rotary-powered Chevy Tracker as a build.
We could do a collab with the Paul brothers because they live down there.
Do they?
Yeah, I've been to Puerto Rico. It's like one of my favorite places ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know they live there.
I really want to go.
Yeah. It's like Indy Miami.
That's cool.
Indy Miami. All right. Well, that was the show. Thank you so much for listening. Follow the boys on social media, James Pomfrey, Joe G. Weber, and myself, Nolan J. Sykes. Big thank you to our production team. We got Edgar on the cameras today. We got Gavin Kinzel, Christina Felski, and this episode is written by our Audrey Holden, sitting back there.
I also want to give a big shout out to Toby and Johanna from Austria. They sent us some amazing hazelnut wafers that I guess we talked about on the show at some point.
Yeah.
But very nice people. Thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks, guys. All right. We will see you next time. My nose is bleeding. I got to take care of that.
No, it's not.